You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Do you consider yourself a nerd? Maybe you're a big superhero comic fan, or you love to geek out to Harry Potter fan fiction. Our next guest loves a wide variety of what we could call nerd culture, and she says it deserves the same level of cultural analysis and criticism that we usually think about for things that are, you know, more highbrow, a fancy art house film or prestige television. She shares that love in a new book, along with a look at how nerd culture takes on things like race, sexuality, and mental health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you nerd out about? What are those movies, books, TV shows, comics, you name it, mean to you or add to your life? Do you feel like you're part of a community, a fandom for some particular pop culture? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Maya Phillips is a poet, author, and critic at large for the New York Times. Her new book is Nerd, Adventures in Fandom, From This Universe to the Multiverse. She's appearing at the Wisconsin Book Festival tomorrow at 9 p.m. at the Madison Public Library Central Branch. Maya, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Can you share your origin story a little bit? Where did you first start to love nerd culture?
Oh my gosh. It has always been a part of my life. I don't even know. I mean, even from when I was a child, from a very young child, I remember I was just watching like early anime. Like I remember I watched Speed Racer when I was still in diapers. Like I was watching early anime from elementary school. I was watching Dragon Ball Z and Pokemon, and I was into Harry Potter when it came. You know, it has always been a part of my identity. And It's interesting to see how it's become so mainstream now.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, but I want to get into this idea. I think this is really central to a lot of your essays here. We think sometimes, okay, yeah, the serious criticism we're going to do for the fancy stuff. This is like escapist entertainment. We don't really need to engage with it that carefully. Why is it important to you that we do that?
It's important because these fandoms reflect who we are, what we believe culturally, what we believe individually. And it, you know, like people, there's a reason why people get up in arms about the representation in their fandoms, or like how things are portrayed, the politics of it. If you look at these fandoms, you can see a swath of what we believe as a culture and what we value. And I think that's really important.
I think sometimes a reaction to this kind of look is, just given the way the internet works now, is I love this thing, and if you're engaging with it and you say something bad about it, you know, we're on opposite sides. There's this like us versus them sort of thing. You clearly, in a lot of the pop culture you write about it, you might see concerns and problems. We'll talk about that. And yet you still love the thing. How can we separate out that, you know, yes or no, us against them mentality?
You know, I wish there were a better solution than, guys, you just need to chill out a little bit. Because I do get it a lot. Whenever I write an article on a beloved fandom, something that I even love, like Avatar, The Last Airbender, I wrote about that and people were upset because I was analyzing it. And I think there just needs to be a better understanding that the reason why I'm analyzing it, the reason why I'm taking the time to think through these thoughts and to, you know, go through each episode or like sit through the movies once, twice, however many times, is because I do care about this and I do care about how this art can be improved.
We're talking to Maya Phillips. Her new book is called Nerd, Adventures in Fandom from This Universe to the Multiverse. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself to be a nerd? If so, what for? Is there one particular thing you're really into? Are you a dabbler like me or really into a lot of different things like Maya? Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You write about not just the, you know, the books and comic books themselves, but also you have an essay about fandom and how as things have gotten more mainstream, we've, I don't know, started to connect with each other and build identities in some ways around our love of nerd culture. How do we get there?
You know, it's really interesting. That's the fun thing to really see about fan culture. You know, I think it's something that we saw really early on with people who are Star Trek fans. Like, they had that kind of really big community that was really active. And, you know, now we see it a lot more. I talk about people identifying with different houses in Harry Potter or different villages in Naruto. There's so many ways to relate to a fandom and like take that into real life in places where you might not feel as included as, you know, a person of color, a person with disabilities, a person, you know, of who's non-binary. That's why these fandoms are important. And, you know, it's great to see that in convention culture too, and how that's changed and how people react to gender bending, you know, doing different types of cosplay for different characters. That's really great.
You write about the treatment of race in a lot of different elements of pop culture. And there's an interesting, I think, question for people. Do we, in our science fiction or fantasy setting, do we try to, or superhero comic, do we try to talk about real world issues of race? That's one way to go. Or do we try to create a society that is outside of that, a utopia, at least when it comes to race, where we can get away from the bad stuff we have in our society? It's a tough question to answer, I think. What are your thoughts on that?
I think Black Panther is a really good example of that, that kind of addresses both sides of it. Because, you know, when we get to Black Panther, it's a very, Wakanda is very insulated, you know? They have been able to advance, they have all the technology, but they're hidden from the world. And they have this front that they're a third world country. But I think that it was really clever how the plot was created, that we have Killmonger come up as a person, as a Black American who was raised in the hood, and him coming to Wakanda and being like, you know, you guys have all these resources and you're not using it to help the other Black people across the world. So I think like that is a really good stand-in for a kind of ideological clash of what do we, especially when it comes to race and especially when it comes to like fantasy and sci-fi, all kind of genre works, like, are we actually representing an escapist fantasy where these people of color can just live freely, or do we engage with the real world, which is a part of our everyday experience?
One of my favorite elements of that you write about is time travel. When our characters go a time traveling, if our characters are white, we don't necessarily have to think about a lot. But you found some examples where Black people from the modern day went into, I don't know, Victorian England and places like that. How do you see that being handled?
You know, it's really disappointing to me because I watch time travel shows a lot. And one of my favorites is Doctor Who. And I see these characters and it's so easy to have the characters be white for that reason. Most of these characters in the time travel stories are white, or there's some kind of workaround so that they don't have to address race. But, you know, it's part of the Black experience. And if you are going to time travel, and if you're going to time travel in America, in Africa, in any of like the colonized parts of the world, that's going to be enslavement and the various indignities done to our race. That has to be part of the story. That has to be part of that character's arc. And to do that in a way that is respectful, but also makes sense to the story, it can be really difficult.
We're talking to Maya Phillips, critic at large for the New York Times, with us today to talk about her new book, Nerd, Adventures in Fandom from This Universe to the Multiverse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you define nerd culture? Do you consider yourself a nerd about lots of things in general or something in particular? What do the things you nerd out on mean to you? Are you part of a fan community for something? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Maya Phillips from the New York Times about her new book, Nerd: Adventures in Fandom from This Universe to the Multiverse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a favorite thing to nerd out on, call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Linda is with us in Milwaukee. Linda, hi.
Hello. What? I'm wondering why we have to label people all the time.
As in nerd, for example, Linda?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Thanks for bringing that up, Maya. I mean, once upon a time, nerd was a negative thing that somebody called somebody who didn't want to be called that. This is one of those terms I think that's really been reclaimed. Could you talk about the label of nerd?
Sure. You know, and thanks, Linda, for your question. Yeah. I don't think labels are super important. And I think that's part of what I'm kind of poking fun at with my title. That yes, nerd used to be something you would call someone who was involved in something a little bit niche, and it was a derogatory term. And now people will say, yes, I'm kind of nerdy, or like, I love to nerd out about this. And so we see how those kinds of labels can change and how people can embrace them depending on what is happening in the zeitgeist. And I think that what's important is not the label, but just the meaning behind it. And for me, being a nerd is something I just say to let people know that I am passionate about these fandoms, and I am proud to say that I'm passionate about them.
Linda, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Maya, that reminds me of your comment earlier about a lot of the things we're talking about here getting more mainstream. You talk in the book about being able to show up at a major comic book convention without a lot of advanced planning and getting tickets, not something that could not happen today. Why do you think these elements of nerd culture became so mainstream?
I mean, it's funny because we were able to see that with Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood did pretty much all of that work. You know, you can see the shift starting with the Spider-Man movies, you know, the Sam Raimi movies. And then, of course, once the MCU got started with Iron Man, once Hollywood found out that there is an audience for this stuff and they can make these big hit action blockbusters, that they invested the money into expanding that into, and now we have all these television shows, we have all these different types of adaptations, we have, you go across every streaming service, you will find something that, you know, just a decade or two ago would have been considered a little too niche. So now it seems like people can come out into the open and say, yes, I'm very into this. And it can also invite new fans in who may not have encountered this before.
Let's go back to our callers. Liz is with us in Lyons. Liz, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Liz?
I remember her referencing Doctor Who, and I have two questions. Bringing on someone of a different race and gender, what do you feel like the repercussions would be? Do you think people would be very upset about it? Me currently, I did not like the current one and the previous male. I liked everybody before that, even going all the way back. And so I'm wondering, how can I break through to that as well?
Interesting, Liz. So this is the character, the Doctor in Doctor Who, an alien who changes form to be able to change actors over time, for those not familiar with the show. And there's a woman doctor still, I believe, the concepts of changing race or gender for that character.
Yeah, I think it's really, I was really excited when Jodie Whittaker was named the next Doctor. I think she is a brilliant actress, but I think that the writing changed in such an unfortunate way that there was an increased consciousness of addressing her as a woman and addressing, you know, race in new ways, because she has, or at least in the beginning, she had these multiple companions of color. And it just became, we just moved too far in the opposite direction, where it felt like wokeness for the sake of being woke. And it felt like being educational as opposed to actually, you know, thinking about the story and thinking about creating an entertaining and experience that kind of, you know, had the same kind of imagination as the previous doctors. And a lot of people blamed it and said on the doctor herself, unfortunately, saying that this is why we can't have a female doctor, but it's not that. It comes down to the writing and being more conscious of, you know, writing these stories for women or people of color. You know, the next doctor was announced and he's going to be a Black doctor. And I'm really curious to see how those writers go back and address his race and are aware of it without making it a whole big deal. Because we don't want another token character. We don't want to have stories that feel tokenizing to the doctor.
Liz, thanks a lot for that call. Peter joins us now in Green Bay. Peter, hello.
Why, hello. Thank you for the presentation. I'm an unapologetic fan of many fandoms. I had a quick linguistic question. It may seem pedantic, but is there a difference between a geek and a nerd? Does that even matter anymore?
Peter, thanks for the call. Geek, nerd, I think that's been an argument argued many times, Maya.
Oh, yes, it has. I actually was thinking about that a lot when I was writing this book. You know, I think I don't think it matters too much. I think personally, for me, I consider a nerd a person who is into some kind of fandom like I talk about, like comic books, like sci-fi, like fantasy, you know, genre, niche genre. And I consider a geek a person who is into technology, you know, like and a kind of IT person or someone who might be kind of into gaming a lot or into computers. But that is my personal definition. I really think people use it interchangeably. People have their own personal preferences, but I don't think it's really based in anything anymore. I think just you call yourself what you call yourself. Like we said earlier, the label doesn't really matter. It just matters what your interest is.
Thanks for the call, Peter. We're talking to Maya Phillips about her new book, Nerd, Adventures in Fandom from This Universe to the Multiverse. Back to your calls now with Tom on the line in Marshfield. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you guys today? I came to the Big Bang Theory about during season 3. I'd heard about it, but I'd never watched it before. And the minute I watched it, I was hooked forever. And I like the fact that they used science and humor and also had real scientists come on the show occasionally. And I was wondering what she thought about that.
Tom, thanks for the call. One of the highest profile TV depictions of nerdery, Maya.
Yes, I also was into the Big Bang Theory for quite a while. My mom still watches it when it's on reruns. And I did really enjoy it, that the references wove it into the conversations. They were pretty seamless. And my problem with the Big Bang Theory became, once I became more aware of it and once I was starting to watch it for a while, was the depiction of the male fans and the kind of misogyny that is baked into the show. And I think that is a problem in fan culture, of course. There's a lot of misogyny in fan culture. A lot of times it won't be very inclusive of women. And I think that unfortunately, as opposed to the show reflecting that, the show also had that in its DNA. And I don't think that was fully intentional with the show. So I will still watch reruns occasionally, but I do find it kind of cringeworthy, unfortunately, sometimes, just the way that they talk about their relationships and their women. Like, these are kind of toxic guys. But as I said, I already see that enough at conventions.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller. Chelsea is with us in Madison. Chelsea, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've always loved reading science fiction and fantasy, and I'm very happy that in the last couple of years we've been able to have more critical conversations about how women and people of color are depicted in these stories. But I've definitely avoided rereading some of my favorites for fear that I won't enjoy them as much anymore. How do you be critical of these stories while still enjoying them?
Oh, interesting, you know, question. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's really tough. It can be really tough. I think that You know, I think that you do kind of have to put your critical side to the side. If you can, like, if you really want to enjoy these things that cause, you know, that give you the sense of nostalgia that you enjoyed as a kid that you know are problematic, I think you can have a moment where you say, okay, I know this is not great for this reason, but you can still move on and like go, you can reread it or you can rewatch it. And I think as long as you have that awareness, then that's fine. Like, these are all personal interests. These are all personal loves. And so no one will judge you sitting in your house watching something that you loved when you were a kid. No one's going to do that. I think it becomes a problem when we give more money to things that are problematic, when we engage in a public forum with things that are problematic without actually signaling that, you know, this is the problem with this, this is the problem with that. So as I said, enjoy what you're going to enjoy. And, you know, just keep it in mind that some of these things don't age well. And that's just the nature of everything. Even things today that are really popular, we'll find something that's wrong with them in the future. That's how it goes.
Thanks for that call, Chelsea. And Maya, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you again for having me.
That's Maya Phillips from the New York Times talking about her new book, Nerd: Adventures in Fandom from This Universe to the Multiverse. If you want to listen back to this full conversation or hear any of the discussions we've had on Central Time, you can find them all on our online archives. Those are at WPR.org, along with a lot more. Articles from WPR's news department, podcasts, and live streams of WPR's two networks. And we're always happy to hear from you. If there's an issue you think needs more attention on the air, or if there are people working on it in your part of Wisconsin, we want to know about it. You can email us at centraltime@wpr.org. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to the director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in Wisconsin for guidance on how to navigate the challenges of housing for seniors. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. First, the Fox Valley is one of the areas in Wisconsin seeing a growing new trend in senior living. They're called granny pods. Companies are building small external living quarters onto single-family properties, either as standalone structures or attached to an existing home. The idea is to give seniors the independence of living on their own while still being close to loved ones. It's not an option for everyone, but it highlights the ways that seniors and their families are dealing with the difficulties of finding senior housing. Our next guest has some guidance for how to navigate housing for our aging population, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you're dealing with right now as a senior yourself or someone working with a family member? What challenges are you seeing in the world of senior housing that covers a lot of territory? What kind of things are you looking for? Are you finding them in your area? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie Mulkey is director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Carrie, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. It's great to be with you.
Now, this was new to me. Have you seen much about these so-called granny pods or other similar sort of add-on housing alternatives for seniors?
I have. They've actually been around for quite some time, but I would say that as of late, these have, they're becoming more popular as families are recognizing the benefits of having an older family member close by and as people are seeking low-cost alternatives.
Again, that's just one option. And a tricky thing talking about senior housing is that could cover everything from, you know, someone requiring a lot of regular, you know, medical check-ins and things like that to somebody living completely independently at all points in between. Can you talk about some of the variety of senior housing options people might be looking for?
Absolutely. So one of the, you know, just calling out a challenge right away that I see is that I think there's a longstanding public perception that when we get old, we need to leave the place we're in and live somewhere else. And we have this image of the place, and it's not very pleasant sometimes. So along with this can come a stirring fear of loss and dread towards growing old. An assumption that as we grow old, we're going to lose our comfort and loss of home and loss of freedom and independence. But the reality is that there are a whole lot of options, including options for the home. For some people, it's as simple as moving a bedroom to the main floor, installing grab bars in the bathroom, removing rugs and things like that, making simple home modifications that can make a home safe for a long time, frankly, for a number of older adults. But then there's other older adults, of course, because we're also very diverse, that need a little bit more care and support. And the care and support can be provided in our own homes, and it can also be provided in facility-based care and with other community resources.
Now, we hear about a tough housing market lately for anybody. Forget about the age, high costs in some cases, a lack of availability. Is that making senior housing more of a challenge?
It certainly is, although in some parts of our state, actually, there's an abundance of certain types of facilities, like assisted living facilities, for example. But let me talk about costs for a minute, because I think, you know, that definitely we've been seeing that in all markets, and that is very true in senior living as well, across provider types, actually, of long-term care services and facilities. We are seeing steadily increasing costs. In fact, just last year, or the latest data we have from 2020 to 2021, we saw a 5% increase in the cost of assisted living facilities and adult day services across the country, and a 2% increase in nursing home costs. Now, those percentages may not sound big, but I don't know that everybody realizes how expensive some of these places can run. So, for example, a nursing home in Wisconsin can cost about $117,000 a year. And that would be for a private room, and even for a shared room or a semi-private room, that can run $108,000. Assisted living facilities are a little less expensive, but can still service sticker shock for people who see, you know, the annual median there is $54,000 per year, or about $4,600 a month. So the cost is steep in general, and the more that those costs, you know, increase, the harder it is for people to even consider some of these facilities, at least privately paying for them.
We're talking to Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources at Wisconsin's Department of Health Services, talking about senior living options, a wide variety. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is this your life right now? If you're getting older, trying to plan, you know, what's my next step? Where am I going to live next? Or can I make my current housing situation work as I get older? Looking at different facilities, are you a family member helping someone else deal with these things? Search things out, make the decisions, share your experiences or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Carrie, suppose somebody is just starting this process, a senior, maybe working with their family, saying, okay, I like my house, but I see a point in the next couple of few years where I'm going to need to move out of here and something else. Can you define some of the options? Like, we hear a lot of different phrases like assisted living. Can you tell us a few of the different things that are maybe next steps and what they involve?
I really appreciate this question, because this is the time that it's really important to talk about it prior to needing some of these services and supports. Excuse me. One thing I would say is that you don't need to do this alone. And Wisconsin has a really amazing resource, in fact, uniquely Wisconsin, called Aging and Disability Resource Centers. And they are available in every single community across the state. So I encourage you, if you are starting to think about what options are available to you locally, because I can talk about statewide options, and I'll do that in just a second. But each community has different resources available, and that Aging and Disability Resource Center in your community can help you sort through your own options, your own scenario, your own situation, and link you with what's available locally. So I encourage listeners to go to findmyadrc.org, and you'll be able to find contact information for your local resource center. That said, prior to contacting them, or you know, even if you don't reach out to them, I do think it's really helpful to understand what some of those options are that are available to you. So starting from the services that can be brought into people's homes. I mentioned home modifications a little bit earlier. So sometimes just, you know, one-time services like that, where it's a one-time cost, you can install grab bars and so on. But then you can also pay for things like personal care, which can help people with activities of daily living and the some of the chore services that get a little harder as we age. So all of those and more are available in for people to stay in the home that they're in. Then for people who are maybe interested in leaving, that, you know, is sometimes people want to get out of their home as they age or as things change. So assisted living is an umbrella term that we use. There's actually different types of assisted living in the state, and they have different regulations associated with them. We have community-based residential facilities, and which tend to be one room within a broader space, not always. But then we also have residential care apartment complexes, and the name gives it away. They're apartments, so these are places that have a little bit more space for people to live in. There's also smaller living arrangements, adult family homes, which is also a regulated setting. It tends to include people, three to four people that are living together and receiving care services in a home. I'm glad that you mentioned the ideas of granny flats or mother-in-law suites, the pods, you know, that people can you know, put on site perhaps of, you know, a family member. So there really are a whole lot of options, and the options vary across the state, and you don't have to do this alone. So reach out to those who can help facilitate this for you.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Sarah is with us now in Whitewater. Sarah, hi.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you so much for this topic. It's so on point with what my husband and I are going through right now. We've made a lot of modifications to the home to make things easier for him as he faces mobility issues. And we have not feared our next move by doing proper planning. And this is so on point for so many people. You don't have to leave your home. You absolutely don't. And if you do, my husband and I have decided we do need to go to a more temperate climate. We've turned it into something that's very exciting and planning to downsize into an area where there are same amenities that I can find in our beautiful home state of Wisconsin, and yet a little better tempered climate for the two of us, and surrounded by health care and surrounded by those things that he will eventually need. It certainly doesn't have to be scary as long as you plan ahead and treat it like the big adventure that it is.
Sarah, thanks so much for sharing that. Congrats on the planning. Maybe we can set up a cheese care package for you, because the cheese, wherever you're going, isn't going to be as good. But Carrie, a big thumbs up, I imagine, to Sarah's message of planning to make it less scary.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. I wish I could change the climate. That isn't something I can offer up. But I agree with Sarah wholeheartedly. And I think, you know, what she raises for me too, which is an important point that I like to make in any presentation I give, is that we really need to change how we view aging. And it's instead of having it be a scary thing, something we fear, something we dread, there's a whole lot of benefit that comes from growing old, not just from an individual point of view, but our communities can benefit so much from having a growing aging population, which of course is happening in this state and all across the nation and the world, frankly.
Sarah, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, looking at the challenges and the opportunities when it comes to finding housing for seniors in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been in the market looking for your next step or helping maybe a parent or other loved one do the same? What has worked for you? What challenges have you found? Have you found ways to overcome those challenges? Do you have questions for our guest? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Barrett. Right now we're picking up the conversation with Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in Wisconsin's Department of Health Services. She's with us today with guidance on navigating housing for seniors, the different considerations we face when it comes to affordability, independence, health care needs, and more. You can still join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had an experience lately with the senior housing market? Are you making decisions right now for yourself or helping a loved one along? Are you finding things that you need where you need them? Or if you had to move, what are some of the biggest challenges you've encountered? Call in now at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, or your questions. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie, I think something a lot of families encounter at one point or another is, you know, as we get older, maybe I can live just fine independently, but I'm hitting a point where driving isn't an option anymore. And that can be, I think, a thing that drives an end to that sort of housing independence for some people. Are there ways around that? Are there ways to help people stay in their home when they in their post-driving career?
I appreciate this question because I often frame transportation as our entree into the world. So it is really important, especially with isolation and loneliness, you know, that can come with aging too. So this is a big policy area that we work on a regular basis. There are some communities that have different resources for transportation, whether it's public transportation or paratransit options. But for rural areas, it gets to be a little more challenging. So I do know that there's a lot of communities that have set up different mechanisms for driving folks together. And a lot of volunteerism is something that we're always looking for. So people who are willing to volunteer some of their time to drive family and friends around, community members, you know, even people they don't know, but, you know, who understand the importance of getting around and how important transportation is. So I think, you know, the other piece, too, is that we assume that people I think, you know, losing your driver's license or, you know, out of concern, there's a lot of fear about losing your driver's license. And I think sometimes we take that driver's license away too soon. So I think it's important to have a true sense of where family members are at in terms of driving. And again, knowing what your options are, should you be struggling or when it is time perhaps to, you know, give up the keys and find other ways to get around.
Another challenge people may see, and I've seen this in my own family over the years, you know, say a couple, one spouse is developing more and more healthcare needs past the point where their spouse can really do that for them, but maybe short of the point where they want to go and live in some kind of assisted care facility. Are there things out there to help people with, you know, some sort of in-home care?
Absolutely. There are many, many, many options for that. And, you know, first let me just say thank you to all of the people who are serving as caregivers out there In fact, that is what the biggest way that long-term care services are being provided is it's from spouses and other family members. And so one thing I want to add quickly is that there is support for caregivers because we acknowledge and understand how important their role is. And so ways to avoid that burnout, ways to avoid some of the physical, you know, issues that can come if we have to help with transporting somebody and physically, you know, with mobility issues and those sorts of things. So first, reach out if you are a caregiver that, you know, is struggling. We do want to help you to sustain you in that role and find happiness in that space. If it gets to be to the place, of course, where you physically can't do it anymore, mentally, emotionally, all those things that can occur. Again, there's just a number of in-home services that can assist you in, again, whether it's things like help around the house or mowing the lawn or a lot of those daily sorts of activities that we have to do to stay in our own homes and also to care for ourselves. So this home health care is readily available in many parts of the state. One thing I'd also mention is that we are, some people frame it as a crisis, and I guess I would echo that in that we are actually losing a number of people in our direct care workforce for both home care services and in facility-based care. So this is another big policy, you know, question that we're working towards. Last, what I would say is it's okay to rely on our neighbors. I think we need to do that a little more. Being good community members and you know, building relationships across our neighborhoods can also be a tremendous source of help for caregivers or people especially where there's one person who really needs help and another person who's providing that level of care for someone.
Let's go back to our callers with Bruce on the line in Green Bay. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Bruce?
Well, I was long-term care insurance that paid the same policy for 10 years, my wife and I, at the same rate. Now, they send me a letter telling me in the next 3 years I can expect a 75% increase in my premiums. That doesn't seem right.
Bruce, thanks for the call. Bruce, having long-term care insurance, seeing his policies go up, Carrie, is that something you've been running into?
Absolutely, and I am not an expert in long-term care insurance, I will admit, but I do know that there are some pieces of advice I guess I would have for your callers related to this is that I think it's really important to, of course, read the fine print as it is with most things that we're purchasing. We do know that sometimes, so it's not just about increasing costs, but sometimes the long-term care insurance doesn't cover what people think it will cover. So for example, some long-term care insurance doesn't cover home care. So as we've been talking about that a lot here in the last half an hour, there are some policies that don't cover, you know, all the benefits and some of the options that people want to choose or select when it comes time to use their long-term care insurance. So here too, there are people who can help you sort through some of this, and you can find them at the Aging and Disability Resource Center. Benefit specialists are the position title, so to speak, of the folks that can help you sort through a lot of those issues before you make purchases or over time if you have questions about them.
Bruce, thanks for that call. And Carrie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Carrie Mulkey, Director of the Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources in the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. She was with us today to help us with some of the top considerations and challenges facing people looking for all the different kinds of senior housing. We heard a note, Stella in Sturgeon Bay called in, couldn't stay on the line, strongly recommends finding caregiver support networks in your area. If you're someone who is providing care for a spouse or other loved one in this situation, she says seek out these caregiver support groups. And you could still share your own, maybe, suggestions for others. If you've learned a lesson, found a great support in your area, tell us about it. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and let us and everybody else know about it. If there's something you want to hear about on a future show, let us know about it. Is there an issue in Wisconsin that you think deserves more attention? Are there voices you want to hear more of on the air? Are there people in your community working to solve a problem in new ways? We'd love to hear from you. You can email centraltime@wpr.org. You can also submit a question through WPR's Why Wisconsin Project. If you're curious about the state's history, culture, or anything else Wisconsin, tell us what it is at wpr.org/whywisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to The Ideas Network.